Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Neil Coolong of USA Today in just a few moments. First, our play-by-play call of the day. Clemson strikes deep, Justin Ross.
It is the pressure, and Lawrence on his back foot. Man wide open, caught, and off to the races goes Justin Ross down the far numbers, and he is going to score. Caught it near midfield. I think he was shocked to find out there weren't any Alabama defenders around him, and it's another long touchdown for Clemson, 74 yards.
In fact, that was the one where the Clemson corner got hurt on the jam, and I think something popped in the ankle. I think that's what happened, and that's why he was down. That's why he was wide open. But that was Sean McDonough on ESPN Radio last night. Clemson won at 44-16, and again, remember the numbers, 14-12. What's 14-12? 14-12 to go in the first half. It's the last time Alabama scored, and it was a field goal. They went the final 44 minutes and 12 seconds and were shut out. Clemson dominated the trenches last night. Their offensive and defensive lines were just outstanding in that game. All right. I know, Sean, you're excited about the drama around Antonio Brown.
Oh, boy. Is this going to make this offseason go longer?
And with that, we bring in Neil Coolong from USA Today. Hello, Neil.
Yeah, as usual, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start. We have to start with Antonio Brown. I know you're surprised because, you know, I know you wanted to start with Davis in the secondary, but that's okay. it's my show, Neil. We'll go where I want. No, okay. So let's start with Antonio Brown. For a guy that needs the money, why would you turn down a Pro Bowl check? Because the winners and losers get checks. Well, to me, that goes at odds with the MVP thing and the cash you would have had from that.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question, and one that I was kind of actually thinking about before. Not necessarily that Juju would be the guy to actually replace him, but just more in the fact that you see half the guys voted into the Pro Bowl nowadays not go. I'm not going to speak to whether it's the financial investment that the players would make versus the cash reward for playing in the game. There obviously is a point where they don't deem that it's worth their time anymore to do it. Maybe that's where Brown is. Obviously, he's no more injured now than he was before Cincinnati, and we know that that wasn't the reason why he didn't play. So a lot of guys are going to say that they're injured. I would imagine whichever AFC quarterback loses, Phillip Rivers, Tom Brady, Andrew Luck, whoever, right, they're all going to be injured for the game. Nobody wants to play in it when you get that far into the playoffs. If you're in the divisional round or later, you don't oftentimes see guys do that. But in a lot of ways, too, there's sort of an unspoken thing that if you didn't make the playoffs and you're sort of a name, you kind of should go unless you have a legitimate injury. I'm not sure what Brown's situation is exactly. I guess I'm not in position to say whether he actually isn't hurt or not. He could be getting surgery for all we know, and he just hasn't had it yet. That often happens. You know, it's not like they go in every case. They don't go from the week 17 locker room straight to the operating room. You know, right, there's a time in there too. So I don't know exactly, but it certainly looks odd. And I would think that somebody that might be that up in arms about an MVP check that he may or may not have had contractually obligated to him for winning would want to turn down $30,000 from the league for a free trip to Hawaii to play five snaps in a game.
Just thought I'd bring it up because it certainly is an odd stance for somebody that we know needs money. And he does need money. He has a great contract. I don't care what anybody says. Was it $17 million plus? I mean,
that's for the upcoming season.
It's
yeah,
the upcoming season.
Paid already.
All right. So.
And keep in mind, too, he's also playing on the team that guarantees more money on extensions than any other in the NFL. If he's signed for $68 million, he's getting pretty close to that $68
million. Exactly. So what are the odds that he is traded?
I'd say right now, decent. I mean, at the very least, I think there could be something, one part due diligence. The Steelers have to look into a trade. There's no way they can't do that. Now, you never know if somebody just goes crazy and blows you away with a deal that you can't say no to. It also makes PR sense to say, we are exploring this. We are looking into it. And it is something we're doing without Antonio's input or feedback on. I think they need to do that at the very least to see what's out there. And also, in the same light, they need to send a message to everybody in the organization that this was a problem. If we can move past this in a way that makes a better team, we will. If it doesn't come to be, though, we tried. It didn't work out for one reason or another. I think there's fairness and value to either solution. I'm not sure which way they'll go exactly, but I do get the sense it's largely going to depend on what they get back. And that's the tricky thing. In the NFL, it really is kind of counterintuitive trades in many ways. The team that would get Antonio Brown doesn't get the bonuses that have already been paid. They don't have to pay that out to Brown. It's just pretty much pure roster salary except for the signing bonus or the roster bonus that he has. Due in March, which is $2.5 million, a lot more than the Pro Bowl, incidentally. But with a flat roster salary, it's easier to cut him after a year. But with 3 years left on the deal, how much do you really want to give up for a player that is basically pushing his way out of a pretty nice situation in Pittsburgh? You wouldn't think a general manager would ignore that. It's like, well, they treated you pretty well. You couldn't make that work, but you want to come here and play for your same contract. Yeah, I don't know. I'm okay with taking the salary on, but I really can't give you a whole lot in return for it. I mean, you might remember, and this is granted a completely different time, but it's Santonio Holmes going for a fifth-round pick. He's entering a contract year. Highly talented player coming up at the height of his marketability at that point. Gets notice that he's going to be suspended, followed by the refusal to discuss the type of contract that Pittsburgh was interested in signing him to. They're going to ship him out for whatever they can. But with Antonio Brown, you've got to get something back. And I'm not
agreed.
I don't know what they could get. I don't know exactly what I'd even want for it. But I would think minimum a pick in the 30s, if not higher than that.
In the combination of free agency and draft, what are a couple of positions the Steelers need to eye and really start scouting out right now?
I think it depends on a lot of things. It depends on the direction of where you want to go, and that hinges largely on what they want to do with Antonio Brown. You're down the long-term receiver that this team has had ever since they started to invest in the fire sale that became NFL-level receivers coming out of the draft at the beginning part of the decade. They've had a guy under contract, whether that was Hines Ward, I guess pretty much Hines Ward and Antonio Brown.
Yes.
They always had a guy that was making that veteran contract. That's how they do business. That's their philosophy. They want the long-term guy, and then they want to be able to back it up with at least one guy that is expected to produce on a rookie contract, if not two of them, like they have right now. So you've got Juju in place. You have to feel confident about their ability to want to keep him around long term. But if he's the only guy there now, his price goes up extraordinarily if Brown is gone. So you have to factor that in as well. Should receiver be a position of value for a first round pick? I would say if Brown goes, they should look at that. If they don't see who's there, if there's somebody great at 20 that shouldn't be there at 20, maybe they take that. I've been saying tight end the last couple years. I like what Vance McDonald is doing. I think Jesse James is solid. Xavier Grimble, I guess if he decided to actually lower and hit the guy he said he wanted to lower and hit, maybe his situation is a little bit different. But I could probably bolster the depth at that position for the future a little bit better. It wouldn't surprise me if they look there. They're going to get thin at guard here pretty quick. Ramon Foster probably isn't going to come back simply because he can make a lot more money elsewhere than he can in Pittsburgh, and I think he's earned that. I think he should. B.J. Finney has been a great backup for him for three interior line positions. They're going to be down that, so maybe that's a position they want to invest in. They're not nearly as deep a team, I think, as people think that they are. They're not a bad roster, but they need to fill some holes this offseason for sure.
I'll ask you about James Washington. What did you think of him? And look, I'm not thinking about him as a one or a two, but is he a competent enough three where you don't have to think about that?
You know, I hate to say this because it's so easy to do, but he reminds me so much of Marcus Wheaton.
Yeah.
Just the size, the way he even catches the ball, his frame. He just really kind of looks like Wheaton, and that's a guy that never really panned out to a whole lot, but I think injuries might have played a little factor in that. In the time that he had with Chicago and Philadelphia. But he was a solid player. He learned well in the time that he was in Pittsburgh. He was not a super freak type of receiver, but he was a good athlete. He was a good character guy. Made some plays for him here and there. I think Washington looks kind of like that right now. You hope he can get a little bit more out of him. I think he probably should be able to. Kind of a rough rookie year, but we really should not be setting the bar of expectation on rookie receivers at Juju Smith-Schuster. That was a phenomenal rookie year.
Right.
Easily, if you look at his last eight games of his rookie season, he's no doubt a top 15 pick if he does that at USC. If he stuck around in college for another year and did that in college, he's probably the 13th, 14th overall pick. The Steelers get a steal with that, and that's great. But from there, you've got to find more complementary guys that you can afford over long term. I think James Washington can be that. It'll be interesting to see how he responds, just because rookie year is really tough for a lot of guys. And again, they're not all like Juju. They're not all going to come out and, you know, really dominate the way that he did quickly into their rookie year. You need to see more out of him, though, more consistency. He made some plays against Cincinnati, made some plays against the Patriots. You like to see those things, but he's got some work he definitely needs to do still.
All right, so I want to get. We saw Josh Dobbs try to play at Oakland, and I know it's just a game. I got it. How do you view the guys behind Ben Roethlisberger between Mason Rudolph and Dobbs?
I think Dobbs was given the backup job because he had two camps under his belt, whereas Rudolph only had one.
Right.
I think that the idea with Rudolph really was more developmental, and from there. I think Dobbs played really well. In fact, I would say Dobbs is what he did in training camp in the preseason, along with the fact that Rudolph wasn't probably where they would want him to be a backup, is what pushed Jones off the roster to begin with. I think they felt they had enough with Dobbs, and they weren't quite sure of the trajectory of both of them, but they felt like they're going to need to keep both of them to find out what it's going to be in a pivotal 2019 training camp, which is what they're coming into now. No, I definitely don't think Dobbs looked very good. I think he still has a lot of the fundamental issues that we've talked about
sure.
in this spot over the years. It doesn't mean that he can't develop into something, but right now you're not sure if he's a spot starter, maybe a one-year guy somewhere to bridge a gap, or he's a career backup quarterback, which, you know, most teams want backup quarterbacks that have game experience, and Dobbs has a little bit of that now, not very much, but he might carve himself out a nice little career in Pittsburgh just because of that experience and the time that he's had now in the quarterback room. Learning, studying, figuring out exactly what they're doing offensively. For me, for my money, I think most would agree with this. Rudolph is the more talented of the two.
Yes.
You have to see where he's going, you know. And again, I think having training camps in the NFL is extremely important, especially for a third round pick or lower.
Yes.
I thought Rudolph might have gone a little bit higher than that in most other years. I think he might have made an argument for a second round pick, maybe even a late first. In other years where five guys don't get taken in the first round. So with that, Rudolph, to me, is probably the most intriguing one to watch just because where his career is going is thought to be a lot higher than Dobbs. So if he has a similar type of jump the way Dobbs did, they might have a pretty solid quarterback in waiting. And that's something that we haven't talked about in Pittsburgh since I was probably in grade school. I mean,
right.
it's been a long time.
Last week when I brought up the playoff weekend, you were in, I don't know, I don't care, I don't want to watch, you know. It's kind of like the same attitude for you. I don't care if I go on the show. No.
I enjoy this a lot more than Baltimore, San Diego, or Baltimore, Los Angeles, I know that.
Well, everybody does.
Exactly.
We polled the audience. They're like, no. In fact, my understanding of the Baltimore Charger game, using an interrogation now. Turn it off. What do you need to know?
Oh, that first half, I was just like
brutal.
Asking me to tell them the truth, and I want to. I just don't know what it is.
Brutal.
That first half was just brutal.
Just write down what you need.
Football.
Write down what you need me to say.
Just tell me it's yours.
So I can get out.
I'll give away my constitution. constitutional rights. Just don't make me watch.
Just no more. No more. I'm telling you right now, the Ravens are going to run. Okay, so so how do you look at this particular weekend? Because we haven't had a team come out of the wild. Haven't come out of the wild card weekend and make the Super Bowl since 2011.
Yeah, it's been crazy the way that that's worked out. And what's strange to me is this year has more of the makings of that than anything. Because you've got, you know, I think a lot of people look down on wild card weekend simply because the offensive teams all had byes. You know, put the teams that can score, your Kansas City, your Rams, your Saints, Patriots, put those teams into the mix against now defensive teams that won mostly with defense over the weekend. Put them in the road in those offensive stadiums. And I think you're going to get an upset or two. I think you're going to get more competitive games and teams that have to adjust more to each other than what we saw last weekend, where it was really kind of a grinded out, two teams doing exactly what they usually do and one team getting the ball at the end. You know, to me, I don't think the game-winning field goal is necessarily the most exciting football game that you can watch. If you see another team exert its will onto their opponent and take them out of what they're trying to do,
right,
that's good football.
Yes.
I really enjoy watching that.
That's
I
right.
think you have more opportunity to do that this weekend than we've seen in the divisional round the last couple of years. I really think the matchups are good. I mean, you know, Indianapolis, believe it or not, is crazy fun to watch because they're a well-coached team.
Exactly.
You wouldn't have expected that with a first-year coach down there.
You wouldn't have expected it after the first six games.
Yeah. And where were they? Look at what they've done since then.
Yes.
That's a team you want to watch, in my opinion.
Yes.
And you look at a team like Los Angeles that, on paper, statistically, they're like an advanced analytics anomaly. They don't make any sense of why it is they're in the position that they're in, but they're not an easy football team to beat.
Right.
You know, and Baltimore came back a little bit on them, but for all intents and purposes, the Ravens weren't even there for three quarters. The Chargers just kind of did whatever they wanted at a low, slogging level, but they dominated that team by and large for most of the game until they're really kind of in closeout defense toward the end. What can they do against a Patriots team that just doesn't have any offensive playmakers at all?
That's
They don't have anybody playing well.
Right.
In my opinion, I think we've talked about this too, that the Patriots made the Josh Gordon trade not because they thought it was a great investment for their future, but because they had no playmakers.
That's exactly right. That was a move of desperation.
Nice,
that was a move of desperation.
Yeah,
it's like
they had a choice.
It's like having a bad kicking game and then calling for a fake field goal. Oh, wait a minute, that happened last night.
Yeah, we saw that.
It's hot.
College games are always fun. The headlines after college games are always exciting and interesting.
Oh yeah, exactly. But that's where they are. I mean, they made that move because they know Belichick's smart enough to look around his own room and go, I don't think we're good enough there.
It's guys, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
We need to pull something off here.
Okay.
What are we going to do?
Gronk
is a shell of himself.
Yeah.
I'll bet they would have begged to get Gronk to take that trade to the Lions earlier this year.
Exactly.
When they had that opportunity.
Exactly.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Patriots were the ones suggesting it. You know, he's a shell of himself.
I mean, and then you got Rams-Cowboys, where the Rams, look, Goff's slumping. I don't, you don't get well playing Arizona. It just statistically it looks good. He's slumping, all right, against a defense that's playing great, against an offense that still sputters, but you know, but they're playing on the road and they haven't won a road playoff game since, you know, I mean, Thomas was a kid. And then the other ones, they're 0 for their last 7 on the road in the playoffs. But you know, and who knows what kind of home field Los Angeles is? Nobody knows. Right, and now you get the Eagles playing the Saints, and that place is going to be insane.
Yep, and that's playing in New Orleans. It's the biggest home field advantage in all of sports, and you're going up against a team that's impervious to losing in the playoffs because it makes no sense that they win, so they do. I mean, it's a crazy great matchup in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it just because I think it's going to be one of those games that you wouldn't have had any idea it was going to shake out the way that it was. And where I sit right now, I'm still weirded out by the fact that I'm not fully ready to bet against Nick Foles on the road in the playoffs. Okay, that's a massive statement. I should be hit for that.
You want to know what? You know what Nick Foles is? To me, he embodies the consummate pro's pro. I mean, you think about his situation, Neil, right? We're in an era like, that's it, I'm leaving. I mean, Clemson just won the national championship. As soon as Lawrence replaced Brian, he transferred.
Right? I mean, that's more the norm. Okay, that's it. Trade me. Right? Not him. He signs
on. I'll go somewhere else.
He signs on. He knows his role. And the second he is called upon, he steps in and performs it and keeps his mouth shut. He's the pro's pro.
And he knew full well this offseason he's a Super Bowl MVP.
Yes.
He will never have more marketability than he does at this moment.
That's right.
And he has no reason to stay in Philadelphia except for the fact that Philadelphia is not going to let him go. So you want to talk about somebody that's in just a horrible position. You know, he's past his rookie contract. Philadelphia smartly gave him a raise for no reason. They didn't have to. They gave him a raise to say, essentially, we're going to tell everybody this is great. You're a great member of this team. What we don't want to talk about, though, is Carson isn't going to be ready until week 4 or 5. We're going to need you to start. And then from there, who knows? And look at what happened. He's basically been their starting quarterback all year.
Yes.
So and he's playing on nothing. He's not even on a rookie contract.
That's right.
It's remarkable what he's done in the time that he's had in the league for the dollar that you know, if Philadelphia has invested in him. Not too many free agents in NFL history, past rookie deals, have been a better investment than the Eagles have made with Nick Foles.
Yeah.
That to me, that story just doesn't get old. It doesn't make any sense at all, and it gets crazier every week. And we saw it last week too.
And just and again, when Alabama beat Georgia, and Jalen Hurts came off the bench. Again, there's another guy who kept his mouth shut all season, and when they called upon him, now he may transfer here, and who can blame him? He's got life left in his legs and his arm. Right, and he sees a guy in front of him. I don't blame him, but he didn't pull a midseason get me out of here. He stayed, and when they called upon him, he won a game.
And Jalen Hurts is a guy that got benched at halftime.
Right, of a national championship game last year.
He lost his job at halftime of a national championship game.
And he's been praised. Now, here's a guy, Foles, who to me sets a great professional example. I mean, he's not taking a vow of poverty, but this is a little bit different than some of the other. Like, if you were to say, who's a better professional example, Nick Foles or, go ahead, say it. How do we start?
I'm digging.
Okay. Oh, then Antonio Brown. Okay, I said it. I broke.
At the very least, you know the Nick Foles, when the chips are on the table, he's playing at a good level. He doesn't play poorly all that often, and he's contributing to a team that can win. I don't want to say because of character. I think that's sort of kind of cheesy. I don't think they're directly related.
Right.
But
yeah, I agree.
You have guys that, because of the character that they have in the locker room, because of the leadership they have, they can play better than the sum of their parts. And that is exactly what the Steelers do not have. The sum of their whole is less than the sum of their parts. They've got a bunch of all-pro talent that's there, and that's all fine and good. But when the chips are down, they don't win. They don't make the plays.
Right.
They're the ones fumbling. They're the ones you know, getting called for holding on special teams constantly. That type of thing has plagued this team. And just to segue this in a different direction back to where we started, Antonio Brown is not the reason for all of these things, but he is a contributor to it.
Yes.
There are many contributors.
Yes.
He's not the only one.
Yes.
This team, again, I'll say this every week until it actually happens, until they bring in a shock collar type of defensive player or an offensive lineman that's been in the league for a while and wants to win and kind of directs the younger guys how to do things as a pro, they're going to continue to have this up and down, crazy, you know, it kind of bipolar mentality on their week-to-week season. We see it every single year now.
I know I'm going over here, but I got to get one more in. Al Michaels on the Miller play. Are they making this up as they go? I tend to think he's got a point.
it's an excellent question. I'll say that.
Okay, perfect. Neil, thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Cliff Kingsbury, after winning 17 national championships, is going to be the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Oh, wait. He didn't win 17. He's 35 and 40. Wow. But the media says he's a genius. I guess there's a fine line.
Must be that automatic assumption there. Oh, that's right. That's where Patrick Mahomes went to college. Oh, man, he had to have racked up some titles down there. Yeah.
He is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Well, he's 39 years old. Who knows? Maybe the NFL's better for him. Yeah, hire a really great defensive coordinator and go from there. At Texas Tech, I mean, they'd score a touchdown and they'd kick off, and the next unit standing on the sideline was the Tech kickoff return team. All right, so let's bring in Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Hello, Ben. Great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
Very quickly, Pat Chambers will have a press conference today, his first since Thursday. Just quick thoughts on how everything played out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a difficult situation because, you know, on the one hand, I think, you know, anyone that's spent time around this program, spent time around Pat, knows that, you know, while he's certainly vocal, I don't think anyone would accuse him of not being loud. He's never really been a hands-on kind of guy in that regard, at least, you know, that we've ever seen at a game. So, you know, I don't really think that that is representative of the kind of coach that Pat Chambers is. You know, on the one hand, you go, you know, you can't really be doing that kind of thing. On the other hand, you know, you kind of look 25 years ago at what coaching was a little bit different than it is today, and what was acceptable was a little bit different than it was today. I saw Tom Izzo said last night that he thought, you know, the suspension was sort of a joke. And went off on that sort of back-in-my-day tangent. But ultimately, you know, I think Pat's a guy that's always, you know, he's gone to bat for his players for as long as he's been here.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt that, you know, I'm sure he's sorry that he did it, but, you know, I don't think it's necessarily indicative of who he is.
And actually, if you watch the game, he puts Miles back in the game, and a couple of minutes later when they have another timeout, Miles made some play. Who's the first guy to hug him? So it was bad. But that's past. Now they're going to move forward from this. Obviously, they're coming off a game that it's one of those, you feel like it's one of those burn the tape games, and they haven't had many of those the last couple of years, but they had that one on Sunday night. I think watching that.
I mean, I think that's one of those games when you have that many turnovers and have a hard time getting the ball through the hoop. You know, that's sort of the thing I think you're waiting for with this team, just because how young they are in certain areas and how good Wisconsin is in their system and how good Wisconsin is in general. You know, Wisconsin has always been, you know, even, you know, back when Bo Ryan was around, and I say that like that was such a long time ago, but, you know, Wisconsin has always been a team that, you know, you can be within 10 points of them the entire game and go on a run and still be within 10 points of them because they just are very good at keeping you at arm's reach. I think you couple that with, you know, turnovers, youths, a lot of mistakes. You know, I think it's been an emotional week for these guys dealing with everything that's happened. I think, you know, it wears on these freshmen a little bit because, you know, we talked about this with Tony and Lamar when they were younger, and obviously Tony's not at Penn State anymore, but just the idea that, you know, a lot of these guys went through high school and won almost every game they ever played. And when you start to lose just because, you know, not even a Penn State specific thing, but just you're going to lose college basketball games. You're going to have games that don't go your way if you play for 95% of the teams in America. And that's something that you've got to learn how to overcome and kind of put past you and learn from it. I think, you know, as much as they burn the tape, I think there's probably things to learn from that.
I know.
Certainly,
that's just an expression on my part.
But, well, you know, I mean, they can bury it next to the Temple tape out by Lash, wherever that is.
Yeah.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
You know, there's always something to learn from those sorts of games, and I think, you know, these guys are young enough to kind of get that.
There are two critical numbers in here because, Ben, I am one who, you know, I'm not going to do the Tom Izzo back in my day, but I think everybody knows I've been here a couple of years, okay? I've strongly felt that for Penn State to have success on a consistent basis, they have to be usually the older team. That if they can get to a mode where they're the older team, that would help. And it turned out in this case, Tony's the one that ended up going early to the draft. But it could have been Josh, could have been Lamar, whatever. And to me, it's instead of getting older in that regard and weaning the freshmen in, they've had to force feed them, which brings me to the two critical numbers, 8 and 307. What's 8 and what's 307? 8 is Penn State's current strength of schedule. 307 is their current ranking on experience. What is that combination doing to any kind of growth for them right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you always want to put yourself in a situation, I think, when you're scheduling, and obviously the Big Ten kind of force feeds you that strength of schedule a little bit, but You know, that balance between games you feel like you're going to win and games you feel like you're going to challenge you at the same time. And you put, right. you know, you mentioned that 8-307. You know, there's no doubt that when you give a team, you know, top 10 strength of schedule and then give them, you know, say welcome to college basketball at the same time, there's going to be a lot of bumps in the road. And I think we've seen that along the way. I think, you know, I can certainly understand the fan that is maybe a little frustrated by this whole process.
Oh, of course.
You know, you watch a lot of these guys. You know, I think top to bottom, they're as talented in terms of pure what these individual players can do athletically and on the basketball court. You know, this is probably one of the more talented teams that certainly I've seen in terms of basketball abilities. The challenge right now is, you know, you look at the schedule, they've got to go to Nebraska. That's never been an easy place to play for good Penn State teams, for good anybody teams. You got to play Michigan State. You got to play, you know, on the road at Michigan. There's never a night off, so you combine, you know, inexperience of playing all these good teams coupled with the fact that, you know, you're never going to get a chance to take a breath. You know, it's going to be a bumpy road because I don't think there's many other ways to do it.
No, I mean, there are no breaks in the schedule. There just aren't. And look, go out, conquer it, do the best you can, and play. And, yeah, I mean, do I understand the frustration of fans going through the process? Of course they do. Excuse me, you don't think I want to broadcast NCAA tournaments over there in the back? I've been here longer than you have. So, yeah, I mean, I want to get to the football part of it. On the football part of it, you were at the Citrus Bowl, Penn State with the fourth quarter comeback, but they were in that comeback and had to be in that comeback because they were behind. What were your thoughts watching it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was sort of, in a lot of ways, kind of the tale of the season from the standpoint of, you know, Penn State has sometimes been its own biggest enemy, and certainly, you know, how well Ohio State played in that second half has everything to do with how that game turned out. But I think, you know, you look at the Michigan State game, Penn State didn't execute great. You look at the first half of the Citrus Bowl, Penn State didn't execute great. You know, they've just had a hard time getting a full, you know, it's very cliche to say the full 60 minutes or what have you, but I think it's really sort of true that we've just not been able to see these guys put all together against really good teams consistently the whole way through. Kentucky, you know, it was probably a better team to get. Penn State gave them credit for going into that game, I think, just because traditionally it's not a marquee name. But yeah, I mean, you can't afford to take a half off. You find yourself behind the eight ball. I think, you know, it would have been the most Trace McSorley story ever if they'd come back and won that
yes,
game.
True.
And he certainly gave it a shot. And, you know, I think the second half was very much the team that Penn State could have been, and I think the first half was more indicative of the team that Penn State was for a lot of the year, or at least in those sorts of spots. But, yeah, and I didn't have an issue with the field goal. I think it kind of made sense given the situation. I can understand leaning on the defense and the timeouts, but that's one of those calls that you look like a genius if it works, and you know, people think you're an idiot when it doesn't. So I don't think there's really a right answer there.
Yeah, I mean, you already put together back-to-back three and outs on defense, and you had 4-12 left. Okay. So, I mean, that part of it, that's where it does make sense. Now, moving forward, two things for Penn State that are unusual. Number one, they've never had, to my recollection, they've never had more than one player opt early for the NFL draft. This time, it's five. But they've also never had more than six players enter Penn State early. This time, they've got 11. How do you view both of those?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to see that many guys go. I mean, I think case by case, you can kind of explain all of them away. I think Miles Sanders, if you're running back, you go, I've got X number of hits in my career. I may as well get paid for some of them. Sharif Miller is a guy who's played, you know, pretty well, and maybe he goes, you know, I've got a situation that I want to take care of my family or whatever. I think that's one of those things that always gets left out of the equation is we often talk about it from a football perspective but forget the personal things. So, you know, do I think some of these guys would have benefited from coming back? I think so. I think probably every player that's not, you know, Zion Williamson would benefit from coming back in any sport, or maybe Saquon's a good example as well. But, you know, I think, you know, you couple that with the talent they're bringing in, you know, I think it's sort of a testament to where Penn State is, but also, you know, the challenges of being a program that Penn State wants to be, because you know what you're going to get out of Miles Sanders every single game. Noah Cain comes in as a running back that's got a lot of hype, a lot of ability, and certainly he's not the only running back on the roster, but you don't know what you're going to get out of Noah Cain until Noah Cain starts playing meaningful football. You know that Brandon Smith's a five-star linebacker, but, you know, until he starts playing, you know, we saw with Micah, who's as athletically gifted and, you know, talented as anybody you're going to see. And certainly, you know, he hadn't played linebacker until this year. But even he, for as smart as he is and as good as he is at football, it took him some time to get his feet underneath him. So I think, you know, unless you're losing a Saquon Barkley and you go, there's nothing we can do about it, it's never good when you lose guys that are right. capable and give you what you need every week. But at the same time, you know, Penn State's recruiting as well as they ever have and are bringing in plenty of guys that on paper are talented. It's just a matter of, you know, between now and when the season starts, of what's the opener, Idaho, that's an exciter.
Yes.
You know, between now and Idaho, you've got to get these guys at least a little bit up to speed. Certainly the season
right.
is long, but the talent is there.
Right. You know, there's no question the talent's there. I think for the 11 coming in, that head start both academically and the weight in the strength and conditioning program, I think is invaluable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the big thing, is that you get in the strength and conditioning program. I remember, it's a different sport, but I remember talking to Tony and Lamar when they both got to Penn State, and Lamar is this chiseled, you know, he looked like Lamar
yeah.
always looks like. It looks like Lamar has never taken a day off from
right.
lifting weights, and Tony's like, Lena, I just never really did it. You know, so a lot of these guys come in with different backgrounds, you know, athletically in terms of weight programs. You get them in there with Dwight Gault. He's going to start making moves with them right away. You get them in the film room. You get them with their teammates. You get them settled in academically. It's a huge advantage, and I think you look at the types of players they're bringing in, linebackers, offensive linemen, quarterbacks, secondary guys, running backs. There's a little bit of everything in all these areas that Penn State needs to answer questions with, and will it be these guys? You know, time will tell, but certainly, you know, no one's ever been like, man, I wish I wasn't 6 months ahead of everybody else. You know, when it comes to development and careers and sort of the span of how a guy's, you know, season plays out.
Ben, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Yep, thanks for having me, Steve.
And Ben Jones, statecollege.com. Wrap up in a moment, brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Well, tomorrow on the show, we will have the Spanish play-by-play voice of the Eagles. Ricky Ricardo will join us. Ricky, Cuban-American, born in Newark, by the way. So he's a Jersey guy. He also does the Yankees. I think this is going to be a fascinating conversation tomorrow. His kick. Now, we played it yesterday. Then we're finding out today that it is trending all over the country today. His call, no señor, no señor. Well, Sean got a hold of him and said, would you like to do the show? And he said, si, señor. So, I think, you know, so far so good. That'll be a lot of fun tomorrow.
Yeah, 3:35 live tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah. That'll be great.
Yeah. Well, it's like you said, we played it more than once yesterday, and we got our Twitter friends saying, that's the play-by-play call of the year, 2019. We're not even a week into the year, but yeah, just the passion and the emotion and the true feeling he had in the call just made it.
Well, it's what you hear on World Cup soccer, except it's the NFL. It was great. And I guess he does the Yankees as well, so I want to talk to him about that, too. So a lot going on with him. It'll be great to have him on tomorrow. It'll be a lot of fun. First time he's been on the show. He started following us on Twitter, which was great. And, by the way, there was somebody who started something on Twitter yesterday. Should Nick Saban be fired?
Was that person from Alabama that started that?
I think it was somebody from Auburn.
From Alabama. Oh, that part of Alabama. There. Yeah.
From somebody from the plains.
I'm standing right here at Toomer's Corner. Let's tweet this out. Okay.
This should be great. It's only because I am a concerned fan. It's like every once in a while I make that joke in the broadcast. You know, I think that player, you know, on the opposing team should turn pro. And you know, Jack, I only really care about the kids and the student athletes. Yeah, I think that player on the opposing team, I think he should consider turning pro. Why? Because I care.
He needs to max out his potential. His arrow is pointing up.
You know, and because I'm somebody who, you know, just sees the big picture. And we get rid of them, Penn State can win. Wait, did I say that?
No.
No, I didn't say that.
Let it that from the pot. Yep.
What a great, though. I haven't said which players.
You have not, no.
That's such a, you know, but every once in a while we'll kid around like, hey. I know I've seen enough tape. I'd shut it down. Josh McDaniels, no more interviews. So he's going to stay with the Patriots for 19. Cliff Kingsbury is going to be named the new head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. The final two for the Denver Broncos job, Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator of the Bears, and Mike Munchak, the offensive line coach for the Steelers. They are the two finalists for tomorrow. For the Bears.
Yeah, Miami's still available. Mm-hmm. You got Tampa Bay still available. Maybe Bruce Arians may get a look at Tampa Bay. You think if there's one person, one coach that could get Jameis Winston right, I think it'd be Bruce Arians.
Either that or there. Either that or Jimbo Fisher. So Ricky Ricardo, tomorrow on the show. This will be fun. I'm looking forward to that. You know, I mean, he's been doing this for a while, and now this comes up, and suddenly he has all this newfound fame. Hey, more power to him. He deserves it. It was an awesome call. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.